Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
Yeah, the right to remain silent. Anything you say can and will be used against you in a court of law. You have a right to an attorney prior to or during any question. If you can't afford one, the court will appoint one for you. Do you understand your rights?
When the wolf is at your door,
this episode of Real Life, Real Crime, the podcast may contain descriptions of acts of violence or that of a sexual nature and should be for people that are 18 years or older. Heed my warning, people. I do not get the facts of these cases off of the internet or from some television show. The facts I'm retelling you were presented to me by the victims of the crimes or the perpetrators who committed the crimes against the victims. My descriptions of the crime scenes, what I saw with my own two eyes. If you're going to get offended, please turn this podcast off now. Thank you. Hello, everybody, and welcome to this episode of Real Life, Real Crime, the podcast. As always, I'm your host, Woody Overton. And we are going to be continuing Scorched, California, the state of California versus Scott Peterson, episode 2, right? Want to give a shout out to all you convicts, patrons, and Apple subscribers. Thank you so much. And love all you lifers. And let's get into it. Now, Scorched is... this case, again, I got to tell you why I'm doing it, but it's just so freaking mind-blowing to me, and that's why it's Scorched, okay? And again, as we go through it, I'm telling the story Woody Overton style, but as we go through it, I'm going to tell you how the prosecution fucked up, how the defense fucked up, how Scott Peterson fucked up, and... just everything is so bad. And again, when this case came out, I was a detective. I didn't know anything about it other than the guy was on trial and all this shit and for murdering his pregnant wife and whatever. I caught a glimpse of it here and there, but I never understood the media fascination And y'all, it was bigger than the O.J. Simpson trial. Now, I understood that one, and I watched it as much as I could because I was working, but I followed, everything from that, actually the car chase on O.J. to, I remember where I was when the verdict came back. But this case was bigger. But I didn't know all these things that made it bigger. And I'm going to share those with you, but I'm going to share you with you from my professional point of view, having been on both sides as an investigator and as a defense expert, how this case is just a tragedy. It is the worst example of American justice. I can't say it's the worst case of justice. Well, it's just bad. Let's say it. And I'm going to tell you how it's scorched as we go through. Now, in episode one, if you hadn't heard it, go back and listen to it. I told you about the all-American Scott and Lacey Peterson and how they came up and met and married and, just everything's a dream. Dream. Can't get any better, right? And they're about to have their son, Connor, whose due date is February 10th of the next year. And, but you know what time it is? It's the jolliest time of year. It's Christmas time, right? Oh, man, what a great time it must have been for this couple that's been married for a little less than 2 years, probably. And they got their baby on the way. And, they got careers or Scott has a career and Lacey is working part time and taking care of little Connor in her belly and shit's good, man, right? Holidays until it's not. And let me tell you about this. All right. So we'll start 2 days before Christmas. On December the 23rd, Lacey and Scott were together. And around December 23rd, 2002, they're together and around 5:45 p.m., they go to a place called the Salon, right? And that's where Lacey's sister, Amy Rocha, worked. And she was a hairstylist. And every month they would go there and Amy would cut Scott's hair. Scott's a good looking dude. Lacey's a beautiful girl. Scott's a good looking dude. And you never see him when he's shaggy and unkempt and all the photos and everything that they shown over the years. He's just a well-dressed, sharp looking American male. But anyway, so he gets his hair cut, gets cleaned up just like they do every month. And on that day, Scott told Amy, they're talking while he's getting his hair cut, and Amy's like, oh, I ordered a fruit basket and for somebody's present, right? And I got to go pick it up. And Scott was like, oh, where's it at? And she told him, he said, oh, don't worry about that. I'll go pick that up tomorrow. I'm going to be playing golf right by that store. I'll pick it up for you. No worries, right? You cut my hair for free. I would assume it was free sister-in-law deal, right? And so he tells her that, and she takes him at his word. And then they go home afterwards, and it's a little later in the evening, so they're hungry. What do? They order a pizza, all right? Have it delivered, get the pizza. They eat dinner. And around 8:30 p.m., Lacey actually talked to her mama on the telephone. I guess, maybe it's something they did every day. They living right there and talks to her about whatever. But Sharon said that she spoke with Lacey on the phone at 8:30 p.m., right? And again, they ate the pizza, right? Some of the pizza, and they start to watch a movie together. And during the movie, they both had a long day. So at some point, they fell asleep. Okay? So the Amy, being the hairstylist, saw her sister that day when she was cutting Scott's hair, and then Lacey talks to her mama on the phone around 8:30 p.m. and of course Scott, they fell asleep, and it would come to be known later on that these are the three last people that ever spoke to Lacey. Let's go to the next day, December 24th, Christmas Eve. Now, this is a time of the year when everybody's going to their family's houses and getting ready for Christmas. And, you know, it's a great day, right? Everybody loves Christmas Eve. And, they got a baby on the way and everything else, right? Well, Scott said that Lacey woke up that morning around 8 o'clock. And she woke up and she ate her some breakfast. She's mama. She's eating for two, right? And baby Connor's in the belly. And so she wakes up, she eats breakfast. And then Scott says he woke up around 9 o'clock. Now, how he knows she woke up at 8 o'clock, no fucking idea. But that's what he said. And he wakes up around 9 o'clock. And he said that Lacey was watching a Martha Stewart cooking show and about something about how to make a meringue, right? At holiday times, we always had a light icebox lemon meringue pie. I mean, you make that homemade meringue. But so that's what Lacey's watching. And then they're talking, and Lacey says, hey, you know what? I'm getting ready to mop up the house. Remember I told you she kept a super clean house. I'm getting ready to mop the floor. I'm going to bake us some Christmas cookies or make some cookies, and I'm going to take Mackenzie for a walk. That's their golden retriever I told y'all about. And they had a park that was close to their home where Lacey would walk Mackenzie, right? And Scott's like, no big deal. And he leaves. There's some discrepancy in the time, because he would later tell the police that he last saw Lacey around 9:30 a.m. on Christmas Eve, and that's when he left to go fishing at the Berkeley Marina. But there's some phone records that say that he was there around 10:10 a.m. So first discrepancy. But at 2:15 p.m., after he goes fishing, Scott, and everybody's heard this phone call, this message that he left on Lacey's phone. And he says, hey, beautiful, it's 2:15. I'm leaving Berkeley. And he said something to the fact of, like, I'm not going to be able to have time to go pick up that fruit basket for Amy that I told her I'd get. He said, can you go get it for me, sweetie, or something like that, right? So that's on a recording. And Scott, now Berkeley was a ways away from where they live. Wasn't like it's fucking 10 minutes away. And so he drives home, and he gets there around 4:30 p.m. And he said when he gets home, he sees that Lacey's car is in the driveway. Well, not really thinking anything about it. He said he went in the house and he hollers for Lacey. No answer. Lacey, no answer. And he looks in the house. House is empty. Well, looks in the backyard. And what does he see? He sees the golden retriever, Mackenzie. But there's something odd about it. I would have thought there was something odd about it. Mackenzie's still got her leash on. This is the leash that Lacey attached to Mackenzie's neck every time she took her out walking in the park. And he sees Mackenzie in the backyard, and she still has the leash on her neck, and it's dangling on the ground. But Scott says, I didn't really think anything of it, right? So What does he do? His wife's not there. The dog is there. She's not out walking the dog. She's not in the house. And he doesn't think any, he says he doesn't think anything of the dog still having the leash on it. And then he goes inside and he says, "Hey, I went and took a shower." Okay. "And then I washed my clothes." All right. I'm pretty sure that Lacey being the homebody, I don't know, I can't say it for certain, but I can tell you how it generally works, that Lacey being the homebody and she's going to be home all day or whatever, I'm pretty sure she handled the laundry, right? But Scott says he washed his own clothes. And then only after all this time, at 5:17 p.m., he was like, maybe I should check on Lacey, right? I mean, he left her a message on the way home asking her to pick up the fruit basket, but her car's there. Dog's there. She's not there. Takes a shower, washes clothes. And at 5:17 p.m., he's like, fuck it. Let me call Sharon, Lacey's mom. And so he did. He called her and said, "Hey, is Lacey with you?" She said, "No, I hadn't seen her." And Sharon says, "Why don't you check at the neighbor's house? Maybe she went over to one of the neighbor's houses, a bar or something or whatever, and just call her friends. Maybe one of her friends came by and picked her up and they went to do some last minute shopping or something," right? All plausible. I mean, there's nothing wrong here. I mean, mom's not worried yet. I think that's fair. And so they get off the phone. Well, 5:32 p.m. So that's 15 minutes later, Scott calls Sharon back and says, "Hey, mother-in-law, I didn't find her." So Sharon's like, okay, then that's wrong. You know, something's wrong. You checked with your friends. You checked with the neighbors. Yeah, he said, "I didn't find her." She said, "Well, you know what? I'm going to go to the park and look for Lacey, where she usually normally walks the dog, Mackenzie." All right, now things are ratcheting up just a little bit, not full blown panic. So Sharon does that. And at 5:45 p.m., Lacey's stepfather, the one that named her Jabberjaws, he is the one who calls 911 and reports that Lacey is missing. Stepdad calls. That means Mama Bear is worried, right? Where's Lacey? So, y'all, when Lacey's gone at this point, she's disappeared. Let's say that she's disappeared. Now, she's 7.5 months pregnant, and Connor's coming on February 10th, 2003. 7.5 months. And look, she was pregnant. And I've seen the photos. So she was healthy. She's big pregnant. And she is missing. So now what happens? Stepdad calls 911 and the police arrive to take the report. And they get there pretty quick. You know, they get there just before 6 p.m. And that Scott tells them the story that she said she was going to go walk the dog. The dog was back with the leash on. And so some of the cops went to also check the park. And some of them, of course, were taking the report at the home. Now, when they're talking to him, Scott said that Lacey said that she was going to go walk Mackenzie. And when he last saw her neighbors, Lacey, that's that morning before he left, she said, "I'm going to do this, and this, and I'm going to take Mackenzie for a walk in the park." Well, you know, the cops are going around the neighborhood, and they talk to two of the neighbors who live across the street, not together, and they're dear friends of Lacey's, right? You know, you're up-and-comers like that. I told you about the entertaining in the last episode and all that. You make friends with your neighbors. You live an American dream, and that's part of it. Hey, neighbor. One of them's name was Amy Krigbaum, and the other one was Tara Venable. And both of them lived across the street. And when they asked him, said, "Hey, have you seen Lacey?" Scott said that she said she was taking Mackenzie out for a walk today, and that he came home, didn't find her, starts to look for, oh, he found Mackenzie in the backyard with the leash on. And they were like, no. And you know what? I don't know that she would have been walking the dog because she hadn't been walking the dogs for she hadn't been walking Mackenzie for weeks because she was so pregnant and didn't feel, had the energy for it or whatever. And that's what she's told her two friends. I mean, when they asked her, say, hey, how come you haven't been walking Mackenzie? And they were like, Lacey said, because, you know, the pregnancy. And again, y'all, they told the cops she hadn't been seen walking Mackenzie for weeks. All right. So, the phone records came back and they showed Scott checked the cell phone's voicemail at 10:08 a.m. And this one, I'm going to start skipping around a little bit, but I'm going to go back to the same thing, so bear with me. And he checked his voicemail at 10:08 a.m. But then after that, he had no activity on his phone from 10:08 to 2:15 p.m. when he called Lacey's phone and left that, "Hey, beautiful, can't get the fruit basket, be a little late," whatever. And that's, so that's 11:08, 12:08, 1:08, 2:08. That's over 4 hours that he doesn't use his cell phone, not for anything. So, you know, and Scott told the cops that he'd gone fishing, and we'll get into that in a second. And that he did not call Lacey to let her know that he was going fishing or that he had left the area before he left her that voicemail. So he never, not once to this day, had called Lacey's cell phone after that phone call, the "Hey, beautiful" phone call. Can you go pick up the fruit basket for your sister at 2:15 p.m.? He never called Lacey's cell phone ever again, even after he knew she was missing. Now, you get home, the car's there, dog's in, Mackenzie's in the backyard with the leash. I'm going to take a fucking shower, wash my clothes. Later on, I'm going to call mother-in-law. Then they get worried, or mom gives them some good advice, and he calls back 15 minutes later. I did that. Can't find her. And what the fuck? Why didn't you call her, Scott? Why didn't you call Lacey to see where she's at? Why'd you call mother-in-law? Oh, something's not right, right? Stick with it. All right.
Woody, do you know why I want to learn more Italian?
Why, I go?
Because my niece is getting married next month, and that means a wedding full of these crazy Italians from out of town.
Huh. And when it comes to learning a new language, there's only one leader, Rosetta Stone.
Rosetta Stone's the most trusted language learning program, period. I've come a good ways using Rosetta Stone, but it's time to take it to the next level. My niece's wedding will be great prep for a trip I want to take next year.
Rosetta Stone is the trusted expert for 30 years with millions of users and 25 languages offered. No English translations. Rosetta Stone helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. It's designed for long-term retention.
And the True Accent feature is like having a personal trainer for your accent. Lifetime membership has all 25 of the languages for the rest of your life. That's lifetime access to all 25 language courses Rosetta Stone offers for 50% off.
There's no better time than right now to get started. Listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today.
That's 50% off, unlimited access to 25 languages for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today.
If people are dieting now more than ever before, why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that doesn't turn into fat when you consume it. Instead, it turns into a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body.
So getting more MCTs in your diet is like flipping a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which flushes out excess fat and calories. And Dr. Gundry has created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it comes in a tasty drink form. It actually tastes good. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized.
So if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/RLRC and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. And again, that's GundryMD.com/RLRC.
Awesome.
All right, good deal. Never called, y'all. Call everybody else, but never call Lacey. So anyway, what he did do when he got home, and this is according to his own words, what he did do was he found Mackenzie in the backyard with the leash on and not calling Lacey. He said he dumped a bucket of mop water and he placed the mops outside, two of them, and that he took off all his clothes, including the sweater, and put them in the washer and started the machine. Then, hey, I'm fucking hungry. Not worried about Lacey yet. I'm hungry. He eats a snack. He eats some of the leftover pizza that they had the night before they watched the movie. Then, well, fuck it. I'm a little dirty because I've been outside in December fishing, and I'm going to take a shower. Because it takes a shower. And then it was after the shower that I told y'all that he called Lacey's mom. Later, Lacey's stepdad called the police. So when the cops, I told you naturally someone went to the home, and let me tell you what they saw. When the patrol officers, uniform patrol guys, first get to the house, they saw several things. You know, they're just observing. They're not really trained in any, you know, as homicide detectives or whatever, but they're cops. And you're very observant, and you look at things, and you make notes of things in your head. And then if sugar turns to shit, as it does in this case, you will recall these things, and you think, it seems a little odd. One by itself, no big deal. Put two together and three together, it makes a big deal. So they saw, they said the scene was so strange that what the things that they saw made them call their sergeant. Now, I worked in uniform patrol, and if I ever had to call my supervisor, it was something was fucked up, right? And I would only call them when I knew it was going to be bigger than what I could handle. Other than that, supervisor never heard from me, didn't want to hear from me, and just knew I was handling business. But at a certain point, I know my supervisor, I'm like, I look at these things, I'm like, fuck me, something's not right, let me call Sarge. So you call Sarge and you tell him what you see, and you know what the sergeant says? I trust what you're saying. Let's go ahead and call the homicide detectives out. Okay? We don't even know where she's at. Now, Scott hadn't even called her cell phone, but the uniform patrols guys, and I'm going to tell you what they saw, but they call Sarge, and Sarge says, this might be a bad one. Let's call the detectives, right? And because they believe this was going to be a shit show, and it was going to turn into, has the possibility of turning into something besides the run-of-the-mill, typical missing person report, right?
one of the cops had found the two mops in the empty bucket that was still wet outside the door. That was one thing they saw. Also, when they were looking in the house, and they didn't search it, y'all. They probably just look around and make sure Scott didn't miss something, I guess. But they saw that the floor had been recently mopped, or looked like it had been recently mopped. Well, you put that together with the mop buckets outside and wet mops, and that's a reasonable conclusion. And so they asked Scott about it. And Scott said, oh, yeah. I dumped that mop bucket when I got home. Okay. Then they're passing by the bathroom, and they look in, and Lacey's curling iron is on the counter. No shocking thing there by itself. Let's keep rolling. And they also notice there was an open bottle of ranch dressing on the kitchen counter. All right. Lacey, fastidious homekeeper and all that. Well, maybe that Scott left that open when he's having a snack. But because also on the counter was the pizza box from the night before. And when Scott was asked about it, he said, yeah, that's what I ate as a snack, right? I told y'all I ate a snack. But check this out. Now, look, when you're walking around as a uniform patrol guy, you're not going to say, hey, look at this, look at this, look at this, directly to Scott. And, you know, if you see one thing, you know, like the mops, whatever, you might let it go until you see the second thing, and then you see the third thing, and you come back, you know what, tell me, the floors look like they've just been mopped. Lacey's been gone, or we assume she's missing. Tell me about that. So he answers it. And they see the open bottle of ranch dressing. He answers that. You know what else they saw on the counter? Now, y'all younger ones won't remember this, but we always had phone books, okay? And back in the day, the yellow pages were the shit. That's when I had my PI business. I took out the biggest ads, bigger than the big firms, and I would cut their prices, right? But you'd go to the yellow pages to look for everything. The internet wasn't, although it was coming into it, where everybody would Google shit by then. I don't even know Google was around. The yellow pages, all right? Every business got a line. If you had a business line, you got a free, at least one liner in there, and you could pay up for whatever size ads you wanted. Well, phone book's on the counter. Uniform patrol guy sees it. It's open. Guess what pages is open to, y'all? It's open to the attorney section. That wouldn't be bad in itself, I guess. It could just land on that. But it was open to the advertisements for defense attorneys. Now I'm thinking, homie's story hadn't been adding up. This and this and this. Little bitty things are adding up, not in his favor. And the motherfucking phone book is open on the counter and it's got defense attorneys. It's open to the section for defense attorneys. There's hundreds and hundreds of pages in the yellow pages. And you're open to defense attorneys? I'd have been, fuck you. That'd have been my key as a uniform patrol guy to go outside. So I'd be back in a minute. And I'd call my sergeants and gave them all the shit. I mean, but it's not a slam dunk. There's no, you know, nothing to say it's murder yet. Ain't looking good, though. They also, now check this out. They saw a bunched up rug back, by the back door. You know how it is if you like drag something across a rug and it bunches up, right? And you got to straighten it back out. They see this rug by the back door and it's bunched up like that. And they describe it as looking like something heavy had been dragged over it. And that's not, you could say that, you know, the cops were overreaching, stepping their boundaries. That, hey, they didn't know Scott Peterson. They were looking at this rug and say, well, that reminds me of one time I was pulling a rocking chair and it pulled the rug over like that. And then that's what they said. And they see it, and Scott Peterson sees them seeing it. And what does he do? hurries up as he straightens it back out, flattens it back out. And then when he did that, that took away any chance. And of course, hindsight's 20/20, but it took away any chance that the prosecution or detectives would have had to photograph that rug bunched up in the direction as if something had been dragged over it towards the back door. And this will come into play in a little bit. Now, as they're trained to do, they go around the home and there is no evidence of a break-in. You're looking for this, right? You want to see this. And Scott should have done this. There's no evidence of break-in. There's no broken windows, no broken doors, no busted locks. And in fact, they found Lacey's jewelry and purse had been gone through. If it was a robbery, jewelry would have been taken, and I don't know what female leaves home without taking their purse, but they're untouched. Okay, so the uniform guys go back to Scott and say, "Hey, man, can you tell me what happened again this morning?" And Scott replied in quotations, "I was fishing," and y'all, what does he do? It's like he was waiting on the fucking question. As soon as they asked him, he said, "I was fishing," and he whips out a parking receipt for a marina without being asked. I mean, fuck. You can go either way on that. But me, on top of everything else I've already seen, I'm like, this is really fucking stupid, and my alarms are going off. So, I'm gonna give you this conversation. I'm gonna come back to it. So when he whips out the receipt for the marina, right? And I was fishing, whips out the receipt unsolicited. And then he has a conversation with the officer Spurlock, and who this guy that loves fishing, he's a big outdoorsman like me. And so Spurlock says, "Well, what'd you go fishing for?" Right? Spurlock's doing a little fishing himself here. He wants to see, he's gauging Scott's reaction. He wants to see what his answer is going to be. He wants to read his body language. And he said, "What'd you go fishing for?" Peterson, Scott Peterson, didn't have an answer. Didn't have an answer. Motherfucker, I can tell you every time I go fishing, and I go many, many times a year, I can tell you every time, whether it's salt water or fresh water, exactly what I'm going fishing for, what rods I bring, what bait I use. I mean, yeah, I could tell you what the fucking wind's doing, right? Scott didn't answer. No answer. Well, when Spurlock didn't get an answer, he says, "Well, what'd you use for bait?" Okay, again, if I'm going salt water fishing, I can tell you if I'm using artificial bait. I can tell you what times of the year when I can buy live shrimp when they're bringing them in. They have them at the bait docks, or live Cockahoe minnows, or, you know, sometimes the trout bite better on live bait in late summer than they do in the early spring. Whatever. I can tell you all this because I'm a fisherman, right? So Spurlock says, "What'd you use for bait?" Scott paused and he said, quotation, some type of silver lure. Fuck. Every type of fishing in the world, from a fucking orca, the whale, to brim, you got some type of silver lure, right? And you could take that all the way down to the hook. But the Spurlock keeps on, right? And just he's playing it smooth. He's making like he's making general conversation, and he says, Where do you keep your fishing stuff? And at any time, Peterson has been like, "Why are you asking me that?" And I'm sure Spurlock has been like, "My fishing stuff, because I could tell you, my saltwater fishing stuff is in this corner of the shed, et cetera. My freshwater fishing stuff is in the mess hall by this, and da-da-da, to go in this corner. I'd like, if my friends want to borrow my shit, I can tell them exactly, go to my house and look in this spot and get all my tackle box good, whatever you need, this and this and there," because that's what sportsmen do. Scott, when asked, "Where do you keep your fishing stuff?" Scott says, "I keep it at my company's storage facility." And they quit talking. I think he figured he pushed him far enough at that point. And they continue on doing what they're doing and shit. And at some point, Scott comes back up to Spurlock and he says, "Sturgeon. Sturgeon." Meaning that's what he was fishing for, y'all. Sturgeon. Okay? And stick with me on that. Scott told the officers that he just decided to go fishing that morning. He said something like, "You know what? I was going to go play golf. I figured it was too cold, so I went fishing instead." And it was in the 40s, y'all. He said, but instead of leaving right away to go fishing, he did some work at his warehouse before he went fishing. And even though he knows he's got to get back, and he's driving this long-ass way to this marina, and we'll get into that, but he's got to get back to run some errands before dinner. But fuck him, he's going fishing, right? "Because it's too cold to go golfing." Well, let me tell you something. My best friend growing up, Hunt, owns Oak Lake Golf Course in Clinton, fields we used to run when we were coming up, and now he owns a golf course. I play a little golf every year. But, motherfucker, if it's too cold to go golfing, where you can, you know, wear all your sweaters and everything else, then it's too cold to go fishing, any kind of fishing. Because at least golfing, you're moving. Fishing, you're sitting on your ass, unless you're walking around a pond fishing, but Scott wasn't, or didn't say he was in this case. You go fishing, much less, and we'll get into it, in a boat. Can you imagine what the winds were doing on that day and how fucking cold it is? It's always colder on the water, period. That's just the way it is. So you really would have been fucking cold. But hey, I was going golfing this morning. I decided it was too cold, so I just decided to go fishing right then and there. But I went to my warehouse and did a little work first. And but anyway, so they asked him, you know, what was Lacey wearing? Typical question. And he said, and it's very important, he said she was wearing a white shirt and black maternity crop pants, and that she had on diamond earrings, a diamond necklace, and a gold and diamond watch. Bullshit. And it will come out later on that she didn't have on any of that. Peterson says to the cops, he said, "I called Lacey's cell around 2:15, but never after that." And even though he came home to the empty house and a car still in the driveway, by this time, you know, I told y'all they had called their sergeant. By this time, he gets on the scene. His name is Sergeant Durfelt. And they go outside and they need to give him the full Monte, right? They about the fishing story and everything else and all that, everything that's not adding up. And like I told you, they were concerned that Scott had no answer for what he was fishing for, remember? And he comes back on later and says he was fishing for sturgeon. Big fucking mistake. Or what bait he used. Oh, it was some silver thing. Some silver thing. And but when, you know, "Where'd you go today?" He unsolicited whips out a receipt for Marina and says, "I went fishing." And he whips out the receipt without being asked. Nobody, I mean, why do you need, okay, I get some people keep receipts. Me personally, I don't. But you whip it out without being asked. And a big one, and it's, is for everyone, I think, is the fact that Scott did not call Lacey at any point after he realized she was missing. And he never was the one to report Lacey missing. It was her stepdad, Ron. Remember, the guy that called her JJ. They're telling all this to Sergeant Deerfelt. And they say, "Hey, you know what? My Scott got home. He cleaned himself. He took a shower and he washed his shit before he called Lacey's mama." And this is a kicker for me. when they're just kind of nonchalantly walking around talking. You know, one of them would be getting Scott's information. The one uniform patrol guy sees the fucking phone book, open the yellow pages for an ad for a criminal defense attorney. That's a bad one. But it's not proof, but it ain't good. I never would ask about that, y'all, at this point, especially a uniform guy, even a detective at this point. I would have never asked him why was that phone book open to a criminal defense attorney, because then you run the risk of putting him on the defense, right? But they also told Sergeant about the bunched up rug near the back door, and that when Scott saw them see it, he straightens it out. And the, you know, what, during the searching around the home and stuff, and they're looking at the vehicles, Scott was worried that his car door was going to hit, when they opened it, was going to hit his truck and scratch it. Motherfucker, they're there looking for your wife. Why are you worried about that? And I'm pretty sure they were going to be careful of it anyway, but that's, again, it's the totality of circumstances, y'all, that you're worried about the little things that don't matter. So Sergeant Durfelt, I mean, he was listening to all this, and he's like, okay, this is fucking legit. And he calls the homicide detectives. So we got to call homicide, right? And this is not really scorched. It's kind of scorched, but not really. You want to, I can see where Scott's family and supporters and the people that believe he's innocent should think that this is the beginning of where the Modesto PD gets tunnel vision, or they get just Scott in their sights. And they're like, oh, this motherfucker did it. He's guilty of something. All of the small stuff isn't adding up. Call homicide. Bring in the big guns.
Hey, everybody. It's Aggo. Listen up, especially you ladies over 40. I've got some good news. It's called Hormone Harmony. Hormone Harmony is an all-in-one hormonal balancing solution. It relieves symptoms of menopause. It promotes healthy weight loss and curbs cravings. It improves sleep quality. It reduces bloating and gas. It relieves hot flashes. It can even relieve occasional mood swings, although nothing like that has ever happened in my house. Hormone Harmony isn't just for menopause. Any woman with symptoms of hormonal imbalance should take it, but it's perfect for the horrible menopause symptoms that make you put your life on hold. For a limited time, you can get 15% off on your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use code RLRC at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and code RLRC at checkout for 15% off today.
Do you want to set your child up for success? Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with a subject? Is your child ahead, real life, not getting challenged enough in class?
Get an exclusive
IXL Learning is an online learning program that enriches your homeschool curriculum. It offers practice in math, English, language arts,
visit IXL.com/
while adopting
today
to each child,
to get the most
meeting them where they are.
Program
plus,
out there
IXL
at the best
encourages
price.
Students to be curious and empowers them how to choose to learn. Now, Cindy used IXL in the classroom as a teacher and now uses it to homeschool our youngest son in the ninth grade. The videos are what she finds that benefits him most in math because he's a very visual learner. The perfect supplement to your homeschool curriculum, IXL offers interactive practice problems, educational game lessons, and video tutorials for every topic you're teaching at home. It's easy to use, time-saving, and everything on IXL is organized by grade, subject, topic, and subtopic, making it simple to find activities for the exact skills you're covering. Instant grading, helpful progress reporting. IXL offers instant feedback and explanations of new topics as kids use the program. Flexible and personalized. Kids can explore any topic in any grade level. They aren't forced into a single learning path like they are on other programs. If you're homeschooling your child because they were falling behind or because they were too far ahead, IXL is a great program to help them get the exact support they need. It's fun for kids, and kids love IXL's positive feedback, awards, and educational games. And it's trustworthy. IXL is trusted by 15 million students worldwide and has proven to improve performance in over 75 scientific research studies. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And Real Life Real Crime listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/today. Visit IXL.com/today to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price. I get where they would think that, but that's not true. If I was a homicide detective on duty and I don't get this, you never call me about this shit, and I get it, when you're going to get it sooner or later, as you'll find out in the story. If I get this motherfucker 3 days later and because there's a report comes in or whatever, and you didn't call me out in the field when the shit was fresh and I could get this guy when he's fresh, I'd have tore your fucking ass up. So, but they did what was right. And they're erring on the side of caution, but Scott's side, you know, later on says, they were focused on Scott from the beginning. They never worried about anybody else. Well, that's not true. They were focused on the fucking evidence and they were doing their jobs. And at this point, I will absolutely say that they did not rush to judgment. They're simply in the beginning stages of what investigators do, and they're following the evidence. All right. So, okay. Let me tell you how I know they weren't just focused on Scott. And despite calling the homicide detectives, they had officers, like, not doing a grid search, but they had them searching the shit out of that La Loma Park, right? Because that's where he said she went walking. And they canvassed the neighborhood. They knocked on every freaking door looking for Lacey. They looked in bushes. They looked in people's yards, whatever. They got brought in a canine unit, and the canine tried to search the park and the surrounding home, you know, not homes, but the surrounding area, and trying to get a scent of something, right? So they're working it. They don't know. They're not saying that Scott killed her at this point. They're bringing in homicide because they already know, again, this is a sure turn to shit for real, or an ape and about to turn into acute political emergency. So the detectives arrive, y'all, and I'm gonna tell you their names: Alan Brocchini and John Mueller, and they would become the lead investigators on this case as responding to a missing person call, not a homicide. All right. And they get to the Peterson home, and I pulled up to so many being called after the fact, right? And everything's going on. You don't have any real proof. But they get there. They get briefed by the uniformed guys or the sergeant, and then they go in to take their first look, and they have their first meet with Scott Peterson. And Bueller, Detective Bueller, said from the very moment he met Scott, he suspected him of foul play and the disappearance of Lacey. Now, y'all, again, doesn't mean he just had tunnel vision on him. He's using his experience, his years of experience, and he's looking at the circumstances, and he starts to talk to him. And Scott is cool and calm. He's just like not even worried, right? He's just answering the questions. Now, you know, some people respond like that in situations. Everybody responds differently, and I get that. But I'm telling you what an experienced veteran said. He said it was, I was a little bit thrown off by his calm, cool demeanor and his lack of question. When they got them questioning, Scott didn't ask him, say, everybody. It would be like, what are you going to do next? Or
when are you gonna call me back? And, you know, how can I get in contact with you? Can I have a card? You know, where are y'all gonna go do now? He didn't do any of that. Now that's fucking strange. If you're a detective, and this, he's not concerned. And and when you know you've been doing this for years, and hundreds of people have asked you those same questions or some type of questions, you just get done answering the questions, and you answer them very politely and a little bit arrogant. That's what Bueller described Scott's behavior as. He said he's a strange combination of polite and arrogant, and distant. So anyway, he said he just didn't seem like a man who was crushed or even greatly disturbed by his wife's disappearance and possible death, right? And everybody disappears, could be dead. Yeah, the that's, we're gonna stop it there. We're getting into the meat of the matter. So detectives are on the scene. You heard his initial statements, you heard the initial description of the home and everything else, and the Scott's cool, calm, and collective. Never called Lacey. Man, if it was my wife, I think if it was anybody's wife, and she's 7.5 months pregnant, I'm going to be fucking ripping shit up looking for her. You would be ripping shit up looking for her. You certainly would be blowing her phone up. You know, where's the phone? You'd be blowing that fucking phone up. Nope. He went fishing. And he didn't call 911. I'm going to conclude this episode. Next week, we're going to get into it again. Everyone, we're going to take it step by step, and I'm going to tell you what's scorched. And now I'm laying the groundwork for the things that were done and weren't done. And remember, I'm going to tear up ass on both sides, okay, on Peterson's side and the cops. Thank you all for liking and listening and sharing, and I love and appreciate each and every one of you. The Real Life Real Crime community app, y'all go download it. It's got all kinds of shit in there, merch and forums, and I go there every day and answer it. Miss Barbara Blunt's cold case, y'all keep calling in your tips. I said it last week, got new tips this week. Great. No tip is too big, too small, or too overreported. All right, and we're going to follow them up. In LOPA, Louisiana Oregon Procurement Agency, if you are a lifer from, you don't have to be from Louisiana. LOPA, Louisiana Oregon Procurement Agency, nonprofit. They save lives every day. People are dying every day waiting on organ transplants, people. And I've met these recipients. I've met the host families, the hero families, the people who've donated. Go, you don't have to be from Louisiana to sign up to be an organ donor. You can be a lifer from San Diego. And just go to LOPA.org, fill out the questionnaire, become a hero. All right. And I'm Woody Overton, your host of Real Life, Real Crime, the podcast. Until next time or ever, don't let me catch you down on murder. Bye. Peace.
You have the right to remain silent. Anything you say can and will be used against you in a court of law. You have a right to an attorney prior to or during any question. If you can't afford one, the court will appoint one for you. Do you understand your rights?
And the wolf is at your door.